Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Lays it off for Marchessault. Cross to Pacioretty. Out of center, got her some luck. The Petro is safe. Rebound, score! Jonathan Marchessault on a power play for a 6-5 overtime win.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Now, no fouls. It'll be Steven Adams.
They give Steven Adams some...
And wow! The one-hander from half court.
Wow!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Your Colorado can't get the ball in bounds on a dead ball situation.
Richard right. In the open floor gets the layup.
Tad Boyles.
They've outscored Colorado by 16 in the second half.
Getting it done on a defensive end. Quality defense turning into quality offense.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful, happy, lovely Valentine's Day Friday edition.
Neither of you guys got me any flowers. I'm a little disappointed. Didn't have a giant teddy bear waiting on my chair when I got in today.
Yeah.
No chocolates.
Well, maybe you should wait till you get home today before you criticize people on the show not giving you something.
He sent something to the house, huh? A little flower delivery waiting on the front porch when I get home.
Would it be odd if you got home and Michelle was like, hey, Brandon sent me flowers?
That would be so awkward and weird.
That puts you in such a bad position. Then you're also kind of like, why did you send my fiance flowers?
I didn't even get her flowers. What the hell, man? No, I thought I executed well today. I got up, went to Fred Meyer this morning, the last second shopping.
What's on your list today?
Valentine's Day stuff today. Picked up some chocolates, got some flowers. Locked and loaded, man. I think I performed pretty well.
You know who my favorite people to buy Valentine's Day or holidays similar of this are? I love when I drive past the station where a random guy in the back of his truck just has a bunch of, like, baskets.
Right.
Where did you get that?
Yeah, you're just showing everybody up, man. You're making everybody look bad. We need, like, a mail pact on Valentine's Day that everybody does the bare minimum.
Yeah.
So there aren't, like, girls at offices that get just, you know, just showered with gifts throughout the course of the day.
But I don't think we should have to feel... like we're not as good or loving or compassionate as the other guy if the other guy wants to go spend $150.
I call that being stupid.
Do you? Okay, so you do like a bare minimum, right? You buy...
We do a little thing. I get some flowers. She wanted chocolate, so right. I got some chocolates.
Maybe a heart-shaped Papa Murphy's pizza later tonight?
No, we're dieting, bro, okay? Come on, we're dieting. But that does sound delicious.
But do you buy your mom anything?
No.
Do you buy your mother-in-law something?
No.
So you just draw the line at only in your house and nobody else is important.
Whoever is in my general proximity, you can get a Valentine's Day gift.
See, I learned a lesson one year.
You got a gift for the moms? Is that a thing? Do people get Valentine's for their moms?
I bought something for my mother-in-law last year. I get something for my mom. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a thing.
Making me look like a POS.
I'm with Dirt, though. Like, if you were in my household, you will get a gift. But it's just me and my son, and I didn't feel like I needed to get him anything. So. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't give my son anything.
You wouldn't give your son something?
No.
Yeah.
I got him a Pop-Tart on the way to school today. I was like,
a breakfast kid.
Yeah, I was like, it's Valentine's Day. Yeah, you get a Pop-Tart. There you
Cheat
go.
Day.
Exactly.
Cheat day. Treat yourself.
Getting your macros with the Pop-Tart.
I kind of want to do this as a poll question now. Is that like a normal thing? People get moms and mother-in-laws Valentine's Day gifts?
Well, let me get out in front before you post that and before anybody texts something. Because I railed against Valentine's Day yesterday. It's a big scam, but... When I say I buy them something, I mean, I need you to remember it's like the bare minimum effort.
Like, are we just talking a card? Are we talking chocolate, gift card?
No, like last year, my little niece, who is going to turn 4 here soon, my little nephew, my other niece, who's 12, my daughter and my sister-in-laws and my mother-in-law all were in one house on this day last year. And I knew that, so I thought, I'm going to do something nice.
Sure.
Because I appreciate them. And I went to Fred Meyer.
Freddy's, baby. You got to go to Freddy's.
And I think I spent $3 on each person's thing. And it was like a beautiful little plant with flowers on it. Okay. Individual ones.
Okay, okay, okay.
So I think the total ended up being like $22 or something random. And I was like, yep, got a gift for everybody. We're good. It's not like I'm out here giving them a dozen roses each.
Okay, that makes it a little bit better and a little more understandable.
I'm the cheap guy at 1080 The Fan, so I have no problem with that reputation.
It's the thought that counts. You're showing up with a gift just to make sure that, hey, I think of you.
And you know what's funny about that is my brother-in-law, when I walked in with a gift for all the ladies, goes,
I bet he was pissed.
You made me look really bad today. Yeah, and I go, well, it's on you.
I would be totally pissed because I wouldn't even think of that. You think of your significant other. It's Valentine's Day. It's a day for love. And not saying you don't love the other people in your family, but it's like a romantic kind of holiday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Like my mind wouldn't even go there to get gifts for those. Because do they all have significant others?
Yeah.
See, that's on them.
All of them.
That's their responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's still nice to tell them thank you.
Sure.
You know, have that feeling out there. I appreciate you.
I mean, is that so you bought $22 worth of crap, huh?
I mean, basically, yeah,
hey,
I did.
That's a thought that counts, man. It's a thought that counts.
Unfortunately, sometimes Valentine's Day also falls on the wrong calendar or the wrong time of the calendar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
Like love can only go so far.
I do know what you mean. Yeah, that happens.
It's like movie.
Sure.
Maybe a little romantic glass of wine.
Yeah.
And then like, well, not tonight. For obvious reasons, it's bedtime.
Hold it. Yep, hold it.
Wait about 3 days, I think. About three more days.
Why don't we wait on this one, okay?
About February 17th is our Valentine's Day night. Okay, I got it. Say no more.
Somebody said today's also Oregon's birthday. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
It's our birthday today?
Yep.
Our birthday's on the 14th?
Yeah. Do you guys not know that?
No, I had no clue.
Hey, real quick, Joe, you probably know because you just strike me as a guy who randomly does research.
Sure.
Dirt. What year?
Ooh.
State of Oregon. What year?
Oh, God.
I don't know why, but I know this.
Okay, I know it's in the 1800s. Really narrowing it down there.
You're right.
I know the century.
You got about 100 years to work in here.
I got a 100-year snapshot here that I could hit. I'm going to say 1859.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Is that it?
You're correct.
On look at that. Point.
Yeah. 1859.
I feel like I know that. Like, it's not a thing. Like, I know, but I probably, it's like a subconscious kind of thing.
Well, what do you think percentage of the state is that doesn't know that?
Probably a good
It's
percentage.
Probably pretty high, right?
Yeah, if I had no clue that today was our birthday, I think there's a lot of people that don't know that's the year.
I wouldn't have known it had I not grown up where I grew up. There's a motel right off of Sandy to get to 205 North, kind of near Airport Way a little bit on Sandy. And I don't know why, but growing up, I'd always drive past that motel. And there's a flag, the state flag and the American flag, and it just always was waving 1859. And it was just sticking in my head. 1859.
What is that, 160?
Don't ask me that question. I don't know.
161 years?
Once I finish school, I'm out on math.
Yeah.
I don't do math.
Okay,
bro.
Hold on. Let me use a calculator. I'll figure out how old we are.
I mean, I'll tell you how out on math I am.
Was it 2020?
My daughter's in second grade. And she gets these math sheets sent home.
Yeah, 161 years old. Look at us.
Look at you know math.
Look at that. Looking good.
She gets these math sheets sent home. And it's like pretty standard stuff. Jimmy has 15 trains. Gina has 6. How many more trains does Jimmy have than Gina,
yeah,
right?
I have no clue. You lost me at trains, man. I'm already confused. One train leaves the station at 1 o'clock. The other one leaves at 1:30.
But like 90 minus 62. Problems like that.
Sure.
And it's funny because how I was taught is not how they're learning anymore. They're learning 4 or 5 different ways now how to do basic math. And I'm already confused. She's in second grade and I'm already confused.
And it's just doing circles around your head.
It's like they're using these ones, tens, twenties groupings. I don't know what they're teaching them, but it's not math.
I don't remember any of this.
It's not the math I'm familiar
That's
with.
That's got to be a terrifying feeling. I've always worried that someday if I do have a kid of like them coming home at a very young age and dumping you with a homework problem. Because you would think at the ripe old age of 30 or 40, however old you are, that you would be able to solve a basic math problem.
Yeah.
Right? You would think, but I would be in the same exact spot you are. And then I don't even know what I would do. Would you admit that you were wrong or that you don't know? Would you just make it up and act like you got it right? Like, what's the protocol there?
I remember at a young age being in tears over a math problem because my dad could not help me out. I went to him. I'm like, Dad, I just need help. All right, well, I don't know about this. He starts going back a few pages to learn the lesson himself. And then I don't know, bud. I'm sorry. Not what? Please help. I need it.
There's not a more truer thing in children's movies than the scene in The Incredibles where the dad is trying to help his son.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he's like, what? No, this is how you do it. Math is math. And I finally understand what that meant. Like, because I legit was helping her with a problem. And it was the most basic of problem. It was like borrowing and then, showing her step for step. And she goes, well, I got the right answer. And I said, yeah, you did. And then she showed me how she got it, and I've never seen this process in my life.
Yeah. You got it right. Good job, honey.
And I ended up going off. I'm like, this is not how you should be learning.
This is not PEMDAS. Come on.
Yes.
This is not PEMDAS.
That was a big deal growing up. PEMDAS.
Don't forget PEMDAS. Make math great again. Come on.
I remember when I was a kid, there used to be such a stark difference between going to my dad or my mom for like help with homework problems where my dad would just basically end up getting mad at me for not knowing how to answer it. And then I would just be left feeling like an idiot kind of.
That's what happened to me.
And then you would want to go to my mom because she would like slowly end up doing the answer for you where you would just act confused. And the next thing you know, she's like written the answer down. You're like, oh, okay, great. Right. That problem's done.
Right.
It was always a stark difference, and I know I'm going to be the same exact way as a dad. You figure it out, all right?
Yeah, you kind of realize over the years that your parents help you in a lot of moments, and then your parents are very useless in other moments. Right. So last night, my daughter has this Valentine's Day party today at school, and they have to make these boxes for kids to put cards in. I don't know about the Cleveland School District or the Tualatin/Sherwood School District. The Park Row School District was this. Hey, kids. Everybody bring in your cards tomorrow and bring a damn box. And everybody brought in a Nike box or an Adidas box, and they just put it on their desk that said, Brandon.
Right. You put your name on it, yeah.
Well, not anymore. Now it has to be a competition. So my daughter had a pretty good box. She had some pictures of herself on it. And then she got wind of one kid's box, and she goes, his box is better than mine.
Uh-oh.
So this turned into a two-hour extravaganza last night in the Sprague house where my wife, not basically, did the entire box herself.
Yeah.
My daughter sat there and was like, oh, that's cool.
Ends up doing the science project for the kid.
Right. And she made a big old unicorn box. It turned from a standard box to...
No kid's going to have a better box than my kid.
Right. And the wife was getting mad because she's like, it's not a competition. Well, she takes my daughter to school today and she goes, this little kid has a fluffy cat box and I think it's better than ours. I go, well, I thought it wasn't a competition. Now it's just parents trying to one-up the other parents.
God.
The kids don't even do anything anymore.
That's a tale as old as time, man. It's like the old Pinewood Derby. Make your car, right? Everybody remembers those days.
I promise you on everything that is sacred, I just told my daughter about the Pinewood Derby story I had.
Yeah.
My stepdad, who was a mechanic growing up, he loved making stuff like that. And he took my Pinewood Derby piece of wood and he spent 7 hours on a Friday night.
We're going to win this race.
And he made it a badass looking little Pinewood Derby car. We lost every race, but I won best looking car.
That's a good looking car, man.
And I did nothing to help with it.
He didn't cheat, tape some weights to the bottom of it, screw them into the wood or something.
I mean, you should do that probably. And you know other kids did because they wanted to win. But that is a fantastic example. Parents just taking over the project and not letting the kids do it.
We're going to use some nice 220 grit sandpaper on this to give it some good aerodynamics.
Dude,
good,
Dad.
He primered it. And then he did like a shiny gloss, like forest green.
And then some racing stripes on this guy.
Oh, yeah.
He did like little NASCAR stickers in the back.
That's great.
We're going to have an 8 on there for Dale.
And then I got caught in the predicament of my daughter going, what did you do that contest for? And I go, Cub Scouts. And she goes, what's Cub Scouts? Try to explain this for a second. This was me yesterday. What's Cub Scouts? It's a group of us that got together outside of school and we did stuff.
You got a Weeblo badge.
And she goes, well, what'd you do? And I was like, we read out of like a pamphlet.
Yeah.
And then I go, you know, I don't really know how to explain what Cub Scouts is or was.
We did some like stuff with rope and wood. I don't know.
I don't
know. Maybe carve some things.
One of those.
Made a birdhouse one time.
I got a badge that said I helped an old lady across the street.
There you go. Is she not in Girl Scouts?
No. She doesn't know what Girl Scouts are.
Oh, she's not into that stuff.
I think it's a brownies now. I think you got to work up to Girl Scouts.
Oh, really?
Don't you?
You just don't jump right in?
I don't. Yeah, I don't know.
They're like Eagle Scouts all of a sudden?
I'm also very reluctant to do it. Because I don't have an interest in it.
Well, next thing you know, you got 800 boxes of cookies in your house, and that's danger zone.
Well, then I'm peddling it to other people.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, if my interest isn't there, I don't know how involved or helpful I am as a parent. Like, if she plays basketball or soccer, I'm super into it because I love sports.
Sure.
If she were to do whatever that is.
Whatever the Cub Scouts is.
Yeah. I mean, like, I support it, but I don't know how involved I really am.
Yeah.
Do you think about that with
Smudge? Yeah, you would slow. Yeah, that's tough to get. Sports is such an easier avenue for us to be able to relate to. That was, like, the first thing that I ever quit in life was Cub Scouts.
Me too.
I couldn't wait to get out of Cub Scouts.
Me too.
I couldn't. I
was, did you do it for 2 years or one?
I think I did it for 2 years, like, third and fourth grade, whatever the young age that you start is. And I was like, this is dumb. I want out of here.
I hated the uniform.
Yeah, you got to wear the shirt.
We go to the meetings, and I'm like, it's just, we're going to Ralph's house. Why do I need to wear the handkerchief around my neck?
Right.
Because it's the honor code. I'd be like, what honor code?
You got to wear the shirt, man.
I had too many questions as a kid to keep going in that.
Poke holes in all the theories.
Yes, I had. Why are we reading this book every day before our meeting? What is it really doing?
I'm not going to get trapped in the woods. I'll be all right. I don't need to know any of this.
And if it happens, I'm calling my mom. That's what's going to happen. All right. Well, we got a good show today. I don't know what the first segment was, but it's Valentine's Day. I'm drinking this energy drink called Bang. And it's got me all kind of fired up right now.
You're getting your bang on, dude. Bangs are pretty good. I'm not going to lie. Of all the, because I don't drink a ton of energy drinks, but when I do.
So this is an energy drink, right?
Oh, yeah. Bang is an energy drink.
Because they won't outwardly say it's an energy drink. They won't say energy on it.
Oh, no. That's what it's for.
I think they're trying to differentiate from, like, the sugar-based ones. And
yeah, they don't have no sugar, but I also don't know if they have
I think that
the replacements for sugar.
Cocaine in a can is what they call that.
Oh,
maybe.
Nice. Hey-o.
Maybe. All right. Well, we got a good show today. Bill Riley is the longtime Utah voice, and he's actually doing a show here in our building. He's been calling, obviously, the Oregon State game last night. The Beavers killed him. And then they're down in Eugene this weekend. He's doing his show. He also has a radio show in Salt Lake City. He's going to join us in studio at 1:15. So we're going to talk Pac-12 football with Bill Riley. We got Sprague in line at 2:30. We have a lot to get to today. Cody Bellinger speaking out against the Astros in a big way. And Mike Richmond's going to join us for the Daily Ticker. But let's start in the NBA. First half is over. Second half is going to be here in about a week. Heading into All-Star break. What are our thoughts on the first half of the NBA? We'll start there on a Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.
Hallelujah, it's Friday. Cause I've been working all week.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Feeling like moving my feet.
All right, Mike Richmond's going to join us coming up at the Daily Ticker. Get his thoughts on the first half that was and what the Blazers should do. That's one of the, I think more and more people are starting to, like, take the Dame groin injury and kind of just ask themselves, what are we doing this for?
Yeah, make sure you're not rushing him back because there really isn't a point in the grand scheme of things.
Well, and even if he's to miss, let's say he misses three. They just ruled it yesterday that this could be, the 1 week off could actually just be good enough for him. But let's project a little bit. If he's to miss even three.
Yeah, they said 1 to 2 weeks is the reevaluation period.
I just don't buy you're going to win any of your three games. I know they start the second half with New Orleans. I forget the other two.
They have Boston and Detroit. I don't know if that order, but so all three home games.
You could lose two of those three games. Maybe you beat Detroit. At that point, you're 6 or 7 back, and you only have 27 to play. That is a huge, huge mountain to climb. And at that point, I would kind of be wondering, do we need to bring Dame back to fight so hard to just barely get the 8th seed?
Right,
to then get swept?
I mean, especially if Memphis comes out and wins the first couple of games, or you lose to New Orleans, and all of a sudden they're tied with you, and that gap grows to 5 or 6 games. You're already 4 games back. That's why the last two before the All-Star break were so important. So if you get off to a 1-2 start or an 0-3 start, and you lose some ground even further to Memphis for the 8th seed, man,
yeah,
I'm with you 100%. It's scary. Don't rush him back. 1-2. Give it at least 2 weeks before you even start thinking about it. Because you want to make sure that him, Nurkic, and all those other guys are ready for next year. This year is a lost year. We can all agree on that. Want to see him play because he makes the team watchable, and it's been fun the last couple of weeks. But there's not a point to re-aggravate something just fighting for an 8 seed.
I care more about longevity.
Without a doubt.
You know, being as an NBA fan, I'll be okay if he doesn't play and they suck because I can just watch other teams and games. I care more about the longevity of his health. And if they're saying it's not that bad, then great. I'm just going to trust Dame to do what's best for himself versus questioning whether he should come back or not. So we'll wait to determine on that. But not a great first half. Even with that amazing run he had for about 10 to 12 games, one of the worst first halves they've had probably since his rookie year when they weren't very good.
I think it's the worst one since the year that Nurkic saved the season. Record-wise,
yeah,
that was
okay,
the only other
right.
one that was in the mix.
One.
But
yeah.
that one everybody forgets about because Nurkic was traded for and he came in and they went on that run for 20 games or whatever and they end up making the playoffs. It was very similar. I think record-wise, maybe a game or two worse where they were at that year as opposed to this year and then Nurkic saved the day for him.
Yeah, and then the second half, you just have so many fewer games that it's, you know, It's not as big a buildup for the second half of the league as they make it seem. But here we are, Portland going into the break and just kind of we've shared them on different moments, but your overall general thoughts of what you saw in the first half, what your expectations were coming into the season, even with the Nurk injury, the Collins injury happening obviously pretty early, signing Melo, just what are Andy Johnson's feelings or thoughts on the Trailblazers' first half? This is going to be a weird answer, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, look, of course it's incredibly disappointing, but I've said all along, in disappointing years, there could end up being a positive at the end of it. And I know that the tanking and non-tanking conversation is done for a lot of people and they don't want to go down that road. There has an opportunity here to be a positive out of Dame getting hurt if it leads to a 2 or 3 week absence. Because if he misses 2 weeks, you're missing 3 games, maybe 4. If it stretches into 3 weeks, you're missing 5 or 6 games potentially. And that's, I mean, you only got 20 something games left. So that's a good chunk of it. You start to play the record game in your head of what you have to finish, what Memphis has to finish just to make the playoffs. And it makes it really difficult if he misses an extended amount of time. But the benefit that could have is it takes away the whole tank or non-tank conversation because there wouldn't need to be a conversation. You're going to tank. Without Damian Lillard, this team is not very good. Hell, they're 6 games below 500 with Damian Lillard playing one of the best first halves we've seen in his entire NBA career. So if he is to miss time, I think there's a positive there that could translate potentially into a lottery pick. And this is a season about seeing what you got in the young guys, seeing what you got in Simons in the second half. Can he find some consistency? Gary Trent Jr., can he maintain it? Getting Nurk a couple of minutes at the end of the year, seeing if Collins can play a couple of games at the end of the year, and then you're building up again for next season. And if you add a lottery pick to that mix, I'm telling you, man, that would be the best thing to come from a really down and disappointing year.
Do you think there's any possibility that Neil O'Shea is currently at the Trailblazers practice facility in those closed-door meetings and actually contemplating what the best approach is? Or do you think it's one of those, well, the strained groin isn't as bad as maybe it could have been. Dame says he wants to get back out there and fight. Whatever. Not a big deal. Because at some point you wonder if leadership like Neil.
Yeah, at what point do you step in?
Yeah, if any.
No, I don't think he's doing it right now because of, I mean, the comments from Dame are as strong a comments as you need to hear. They're ready to go in the second half.
As long as Dame is feeling a certain way, you can't go against that because you don't want to jeopardize the relationship.
But here's the thing is if you come out with a sluggish start and Memphis doesn't fall off, like a big part of Portland making the playoffs, and we've been both kind of guilty of it, is thinking eventually the slipper's going to fall off of Memphis,
absolutely.
Right? They're a young team. Can they maintain this? And we've been saying that now for a number of weeks. They went into the break winning 8 out of 10 and smoking Portland, essentially winning by double digits the entire time. So they haven't stopped yet. And if it doesn't stop for them, that lead is going to grow if Portland's unable to pick up their act. So you're going to get to a point eventually where, again, you don't even need to have the conversation. And I would hope towards the end of the year with, you know, 10 games left or 15 games left and you're 6 or 7 potentially out of the 8 seed, I would hope then that the reality would set in of saying, man, let's load management this stuff. Let's start Simons. Let's start Trent. Let's give these guys some nights off. There's no point in pushing everybody to the brink of exhaustion just to fight for something that's clearly not going to happen.
Well, I guess what I wonder is with the mentality, and I love the mentality. I do not want to misconstrue this at all. I love this chip on the shoulder, screw you, we're fighting hard, and we're going to do what we can to win mentality that the franchise player has. But I almost wonder sometimes, is there any element willing to say it's a little detrimental? Like, he was steadfast in his belief after that Memphis game, even with the injury, we're coming. Don't doubt us. And that's great. I think there's a lot to what he says that way.
That's always going to be his mentality.
That has created this culture of consistency within the NBA. Now, sure, not a championship winner, but a consistent team that they're in the playoffs and whether it's the first round or the Western Conference Finals, they're in that fight. And that's great. But in moments like this, how many other players, like LeBron last year, do you think LeBron got to a point where he still averaging 27 and 7, said, yeah, there's no point in pushing
he
this.
He for sure did, without a doubt. The team wasn't playing well. They weren't going to make the playoffs. And he said, you know what? I'm done. It was the first year of his career in what, like 15 years that he wasn't in the postseason?
I think his rookie year. It was like the second time ever in his whole career.
He finally got a little extra time to rest in the offseason, and you're seeing it, I think, pay dividends for him this year. He's not taking a lot of nights off, and his numbers are still great at an old age.
He's playing 37 a game.
Right.
Dame is playing 37 minutes a game. So like when they're going out there, he's helping them win games that maybe some people don't think they can, and he's putting them in this spot of coming close to competing or getting that eight seed, yet they're just putting him out there and running him.
Yeah.
37 minutes?
Well, I think your point is valid, and it's why the tank, not tank conversation has always been a back and forth. And people don't want to lose the culture. You don't want to lose what you fought so hard to build over the last handful of years. But here's the thing that's different about what Portland's doing this year, I think, that wouldn't affect it, is you're going down swinging. This isn't a purposeful thing. You're not the 76ers. You're not trying to lose. You're not Golden State this year, who clearly waved the white flag, but their culture is going to be fine because they've won championships. You're going down swinging. And if you go, there's no shame in that for Dame, and there's no shame in that for the organization. You had a crappy year. The offseason additions didn't work the way that you thought that they would. You didn't make a big move at the deadline. And three of your five starters are out. On top of that, CJ McCollum, who was supposed to take a big step, is the same player he's always been with 20 points, and the field goal percentage is down. So There's no shame if you don't make the playoffs. You're not going to lose any culture because you didn't do it on purpose. It just was one of those years. They happen in sports. Injuries happen. They pile up. You don't make the playoffs, and then you go at it again next year.
All right, well, let's talk with Mike Richmond of NBC Sports Northwest. He's going to join us coming up next. He covers the Trailblazers, good friend of the show. We get his thoughts on the first half and the approach for the second half with the team now dealing with a bit of an injury with Dame in his groin. Mike Richmond is next, but first, Joe with a sports update.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, we're talking Blazers with our good friend Mike Richmond of NBC Sports Northwest, also the host of the Locked On Blazers podcast. He's always looking for your questions every Monday on Twitter at Mike G Rich, and he joins us now. Mike, we were talking about kind of just what the first half really was, if you could put it into words, and then what they're doing in the second half. I want to ask a question. I feel like I know this answer, but I want you to chime in here. Is there any part of Neil Olshey you think that inside their facilities with the doors closed, he's contemplating now with the Dame injury of just saying, what are we really aiming to do out of this season anyway? Questioning whether they should really go for it.
Absolutely. I think his job is different from the players and the coaches. He's probably thinking more long-term, you would hope. And I think as much as it's important to Dame to make the playoffs and have that be part of his resume that he always gets there and that type of thing, the front office, I'm sure, would rather be in the lottery to some extent. I mean, would you rather play the Lakers in the opening round of the playoffs, or would you rather just collect some ping pong balls? I think that might not affect his decision making going forward, but I'm certain that he certainly considered it.
Well, let me ask you another one that I feel like I know the answer to, but I'm curious your thoughts on it. And that is, does that logic, what does it take for that logic to seep into the mind as a player? Because we know Dame's going to be out at least a week, maybe 2 weeks. You could miss a couple of games. You're already four out of the eight seed. Like, how bad or how deep does that gap have to get for the players to finally sit up and acknowledge, like, hey, we're not going to make it. Maybe we should load manage here.
Yeah, the only player that I've ever really seen be aggressively in on the tank recently seems to be Draymond Green. So whatever it took to get Draymond there, like an injury, losing Kevin Durant, an injury to the best player maybe of the generation, an injury to the best shooter of the maybe of all time, and then the deflection or the defection of your best defensive player. So it would take a lot. It would take a lot to get there. I don't know that Dame is wired in such a way that he could ever get to the point that says, I'm going to take games off because I'm thinking about 2021 or whatever. And if he isn't wired that way and unable to get there, then he's not going to let anyone else get there either.
Yeah, this is Mike Richmond of NBC Sports Northwest on Twitter at Mike G Rich. Give him a follow on Twitter. Good friend of the show, covering the Blazers now for quite some time. We've had conversations recently, Richmond, about CJ. And, you know, I responded to a tweet the other day on social media of, two max contracts, one max player. What have you made of what CJ has been largely for this season and maybe the last couple years?
You know, I don't think he's been very good the last month, but his whole body of work this season, this is who he is. He's shooting about his average from the field. His assists have even gone up from last season. I mean, he's not making free throws. If you're going to be mad at him, be mad at him that he's missing free throws. But this is kind of who he is. So if you thought that CJ was a really high-level player a year ago, it'd be hard for me to think that this last 3 weeks has really changed your opinion. He was incredibly valuable in the playoffs. He was undeniably the reason they won that Denver series. There's just no way around it. He was probably their best player in that series, right? Mm-hmm. But he was their their third best player for most of the regular season last year. I don't think that's changed. His paycheck is going to bump up a little bit here in the near future, but he's 28 years old. He's a finished product. So expecting him to take these massive leaps seems unfair. So either you're on board or you're off.
Well, is it unfair though? When you mention that contract, right? Doesn't it, what does it get to, Dirt? Is it 36?
I think the highest is 33 and a half.
Okay.
It's
33. Like I don't disagree with what you just said, like how much he helped them in that Denver series and was probably the best player for Portland, especially in that game seven. I think what people would look at though is like, you're not paid to be the third best player during the regular season, right? He had that quote after. Go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. It's that he hasn't, like, if you were on board before, then stay on board. But if you were mad at him before, like he just isn't a max level player. He's the Blazers' third best player when they're fully healthy. He has some real tools that matter in the playoffs, but he hasn't drastically changed one way or the other. I mean, he's probably incapable of being a guy who needs $35 million or who commands $35 million. Like he's a finished product, and either you like him or you don't. And if there is frustration, I can't imagine that changing in any direction.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You're on one side of the argument or the other, and it's only going to get worse for the anti-CJ folk with the more money that he makes every year. It's only going to keep going up. I did want to ask you about the Nurkic thing, man. He was back in practice, and we had Blazer fans like hitting us up during the show that day. Like, this is such great news. Why aren't you talking about it more? Everybody was fired up. This is going to change the season. And then a calf injury, hasn't returned. Just kind of what's your read on him, if you've heard anything? And then are you expecting anything from him in the second half?
You know, I hadn't heard anything. I know that during his sort of whole rehab process, the Blazers weren't necessarily concerned about the leg. It was just everything else. And I think the calf injury highlights the everything else part that was concerning them. It's just, he's a big guy. It's a pretty tough injury. He had to take a long time off, and getting back into basketball and all the things that your body needs compensation wise to get back into basketball can lead to these types of things. So this was the exact thing that they were mostly worried about over the, like, while he was ramping his on-court activity mm-hmm. up. Mm-hmm. So I haven't heard an update in terms of what he's doing, but the Blazers don't practice a whole lot, so Nurk might be doing more stuff behind the scenes than we know, just not in the formal practice setting like we've seen. But I think they're going to be very, very cautious. I would assume they want him to play and he wants to play, but they are not. They're just going to roll with what they have, and if Nurk is part of what they have and they feel comfortable, they'll do it. But there is no amount of playoff chase or standings or whatever, or even other health issues that would push Nurk in that direction. They are going to, it'll be independent of everything else happening on the floor.
This is Blazer beat writer Mike Richmond of NBC Sports Northwest, our guest here on the Daily Ticker, talking Blazers into the first half. Got a week off before the second, and they're going to try to make that push, as Dame and CJ both alluded to after that Memphis game. They're going for it, and people better watch out and believe that they can do it. He's on Twitter at Mike G Rich. You know, I kind of look at the contract situations, and this isn't to suggest that all of them are truly untouchable, but you kind of look at it and break it down with Dame, CJ, Nurk, Collins, and Anfernee, at least right now to me, might be your five most untouchable players on the roster. Maybe I'm wrong on those five. Maybe it's somebody else, but I view it as those five. What's the window for those five to get something done before Neil maybe looks at it and goes, I got to mess with this a little bit and maybe look in a different direction in a certain extent?
Well, I think you highlighted one of the issues is that CJ McCollum is going to get less tradable into the future, right? Like, I don't think that they're obviously not going to, I don't think they're going to consider that this summer. I don't think that's a near-term consideration for this team by any means. Yeah. But it's not like if you wait and Ant really takes the step forward that CJ McCollum at age 31 making $35 million is a sexy contract. He's a pretty good player who's probably a little bit overpaid. That's not going to change. So the window is probably just until these contracts, until Dame and CJ's contracts are done, 2024, because they're going to be, Dame isn't going anywhere and CJ is going to be hard to move. So you just kind of, this is probably the group, and you got to figure out the margins to maximize this group.
Do you think that Neil might be secretly hoping that Anfernee can start panning out more and more consistently to at some point push him in there versus having CJ at that number?
How could there be anything secret about Neil Olshay's love of Anfernee Simons?
That's a good, yeah, touche, touche.
He's the best prospect he's ever drafted, man. Come on.
Listen, he almost threw the young man a parade in August prior to the season starting. So, yeah, I think Neil's pretty much on board with Anfernee being good, Greg.
Well, you know what I'm saying. Well, getting the CJ contract off the book.
Richmond, I do want to ask you, though, I do want to ask you about Simons, though, because we've gone back and forth on him a million times this year of just it's such a difficult conundrum because of how hyped he was going into the year, not just from Olshay, but from media members, other folks around the NBA. Maybe it all stemmed from Olshay, but there was so much anticipation about him. And then you see him coming out and really not a lot of flashes. I mean, he went into the All-Star break with a flash. He played really well in Memphis the other sure. night coming off the concussion. But there's this balance of like, man, this is the first serious basketball he's played in a couple of years, not going to college, didn't play last year. Now he's getting minutes. And so you kind of want to criticize him for not being better. But you remember he's only 20 years old. Just like, where do you fall on the first half for Simons now getting his first serious run in the NBA?
I don't think you can put him in any other column but disappointment. But I also don't think that that's totally his fault. You know, like, he was hyped up probably unfairly, but also he just hasn't performed. And it's not that he hasn't performed at a high level. Maybe the Blazers were saying he's going to be the star or whatever. And he certainly hasn't been that, but he just hasn't been really, he's had a lot of nights where he shouldn't be part of the rotation. And that's believable for a 20-year-old, mm-hmm. but the Blazers cleared the decks. They did everything to give him space to play and grow and be this, you know, third guard complement to their two others, and he just hasn't been that. I mean, he's the second best guard in his draft class on the roster. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know where yeah. I don't know what other box to put him in. A disappointment. Doesn't mean that he can't be good in the future. It's just that he isn't right now.
Yeah, I'll get you out of here with this one, man. Do you think that they're going to get that 8 seed, or do you think Memphis, the way they're playing right now, and I know they're going to have a week off, but they're playing really good basketball, have been for quite some time. And they've built that 4-game lead up. Dame might miss the first one or two games in the second half. Do you think they're going to catch Memphis and get the 8 seed?
You know, I have been pretty consistently burned betting and predicting against Damian Lillard. But I'm going to do it again.
At some point, you're going to be right.
Yeah, he has got me a couple times over the last few years by just dragging a team that I didn't think was in good that good to heights that I didn't think they could get to. I think Memphis has a better team than the Blazers do right now. Yeah. They have more and better players. They don't have a star at Dame's level, but they have a better roster. And I think 4 games back or 5 games back in the loss column with 26 is a lot to overcome. So I don't think it's wholly unlikely that the Blazers make it, but if I have to pick, I'm saying that they don't.
Yeah.
How'd UNC blow that game last weekend?
Oh,
Why would you do that to him, dude?
He actually probably cried.
I'm sorry. That was a low blow. My apologies.
That is so mean. But how did they blow it, though?
Oh, you know how they blew it? Because they're bad. They're bad. They've done this before. Listen, I don't want to get into the deep into ACC basketball, but this isn't the first time the Blazers or the Tar Heels have blown a 10-point lead in the final 3 minutes and lost a game in overtime this month.
Yeah. Ouch. That's been a rough year, man.
Virginia Tech, Clemson, they came back and they lost to the worst team in the ACC by 25 on the road. They play Virginia this weekend. They're going to lose there too. If y'all want to have me back next week, we could keep talking about how Carolina is bad.
Sadly, I don't think people... Go ahead.
You know who they beat this year, though? Oregon Ducks.
They did.
A bad loss on the resume.
They did. So, they looked great at the time. I know. Like, hey, they lost to a top 10 team. This is great. And they didn't live up to their end of the bargain.
Yeah, Oregon's going to get that 5 seed. You could thank my Tar Heels, baby.
There you go. Mike Richmond, NBC Sports Northwest, covering the Blazers on Twitter, at Mike G. Rich. Man, Richmond, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for hopping on, man, and enjoy the All-Star festivities this weekend.
Oh, I will enjoy it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, there we go. Great stuff from Mike Richmond, just on all things Trailblazers.
You know, the Simons one is interesting. We got into that briefly. Was that yesterday or the day before at the end of the show? I think Mike's right. You have to label it disappointing. It's unfair, but you have to. He hasn't lived up to the way he was billed. And that is, you just wonder, when is Neil O'Shea going to learn his lesson? Because he is setting his players up for failure. He did it with Zach Collins, where he said, this guy's a franchise building block. He's going to be he's the missing link we need. And Collins has had his moments. I think he's shown flashes. This year, it's not his fault he got hurt. But it immediately created this animosity in the fan base of, wait, I'm not seeing it. I thought this guy was a cornerstone. Mm-hmm. And every little weakness that he showed, people would criticize him for it. And I fear that the same thing's going to happen with Simons. When you build a player up to that level, we all fell into it in August. Like, oh, my God, this guy, you could be your Pascal Siakam. He's going to put you over the top. Nobody sees him coming. And he's averaging 9 points a game, and really only two or three games that stand out over the first half of the year. You set him up for failure.
I guess my big question to Richmond about Simons and the CJ thing isn't to suggest that, hey, we should dump CJ and just put Anfernee in. Because, again, we haven't seen enough from Anfernee to get to that point. But, like, when you hype up a player the level that he did, and you talk about he's the greatest talent you've ever drafted, okay, what's the end game here? Is he just the sixth man?
Right.
Because you're not running a lineup of Dame CJ Anfernee as three of your five. You're just not. So What's the end game move here? Give CJ the contract, keep CJ happy, and then get to a point where you can trade CJ and you sign Anfernee at a much lower level, so Your salary cap's different.
You save a little money.
Or is it to develop Anfernee and make him Jamal Crawford or Lou Williams, where he just comes off the bench and gives you 20 a game?
Yeah.
What's the end game is what I'm really curious about with the Simons, Dame, CJ thing. We'll read some thoughts coming up next on the fan text line, and then the All-Star festivities this weekend. And then we got a whole lot more to get to in hour number two next on 1080 The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague, gone 1080, The Fan.
Joe put a screenshot of some of the text at the fan text line at 55305 on his Twitter account, at JoeFish3. And a lot of, like, anti-CJ sentiments being shared right now.
Yeah, I had to crop out a couple because they were...
I think Richmond's point's fair. You're either a CJ guy or you're not.
And I disagree with that. I didn't want to get into it and overtake the interview with just the topic.
Well, I know a lot of people that are pro CJ people, and they defend him constantly.
See, and I think Game 7 and the Denver series are important to acknowledge, but I'm getting a sense, it could be way off here, getting a sense that this season is starting to turn some people into,
I would hope,
what does he really offer outside of X?
Well, I think the tough spot.
In a regular season.
Exactly. In a regular season, game in and game out. The tough spot that he is in is, you know, Richmond points to, he's 28. This is who he is. He's a finished product, right? He's reached his ceiling. He's just going to be 21 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists. Whatever his numbers are, that's who CJ McCollum is year in and year out. What puts him in a tough spot is the guy that's playing alongside him always finds a way to improve. There's never a finished product with Damian Lillard.
Right.
There's something new that's brought every summer, whether it's being better defensively, whether it's the assist numbers going from 5 all the way up to nearly 8 this year, whether it's him, you know, being shooting from longer distance, right? Adding that to his game, or now he has that Steph Curry factor where you got to guard him when he comes over the half court line. He always adds something, and CJ doesn't.
Setting career highs twice in one season, a 60-point game and a 61-point game Dame, things like that.
God, two 60-point games in like a 4 or 5-game span, right? Or was it 3-game span?
I think it was a little longer because that
was a little longer.
That first one was the Nets game where everybody forgot because they lost.
You know, but honestly, the stretch that he had was just so amazing that I kind of just, oh, yeah, he got 60-50, 60-50, 60-50, 40.
Right.
That's in my mind. That's how I viewed it. But, right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm way off. And the pro CJ people, it's interesting we get to this point, right? The pro and the anti of what should be your second best player because of the contract. Maybe I'm misreading this, and the pro CJ people just acknowledge, yeah, he's got his shortcomings in the regular season, but The last few games, he'll turn it on, and then in the playoffs, he's important. Maybe that's as simple as it is.
Just as far as I've been a CJ guy, and I have not been a CJ guy like 2-3 times now each in his career, because it seems like, yeah, it's all right. Well, he's young, improving. Now he's giving you that performance. Right. Sweet. All right, we got that second guy. Well, I don't know if he's given us much. Then he gives us that playoff performance, and it's another high. And then we get this season. So it's like sometimes you're on, sometimes you're off. And now that that contract is into play, that is changing a lot of people's tunes on it.
I guess that was what I was going to say, Joe, to that is it's very fair to be up and then be down and to be up and to be down. I think that's kind of normal behavior of fans. But how I view it now is more, and I'm not faulting CJ for this because go get your bag. But if you're given a certain contract, I view it more in the prism of, are you actually, is it worth that contract from the start of the season to the very end, whenever that is? If you're only highlighting a certain amount of games versus the vast majority are just kind of mundane, same stuff, well, that's when it starts to get into the conversation of if you think it's worth it. But
right. Well, and somebody texted in, where to go, the fan text line. Every team needs a scapegoat. Feels like CJ and Whiteside have taken that role this year. And look, there is, I think, a certain element of truth to that. When you have a disappointing year, you're going to pinpoint weaknesses and things that you don't like as a fan. And maybe if the roster stays healthy, or if Nurkic, you know, let's say it's not a catastrophic injury and he plays this year, Collins doesn't go down, Hood goes down, maybe we're in a completely different sphere as a conversation. Yeah. But there would still always be the point in the back of my mind, and that is when a company invests more money in you, they want more production out of you.
There's an expectation that, hey, you've done an exceptional job.
We're paying for you for what you've accomplished, but we also think you're going to improve. We think you're going to become better as a basketball player.
You're going to take the team to the next height, right?
And when you don't improve and we're paying you, you know, $8 million more every single year, basically, as you go on in your career, it's not quite that big of a jump, but he is going up every single year and you remain the same player. That's when it becomes a conversation because, and I'm pointing this out a million times, you have too, you're 2-3 years away from paying $85 million combined for Dame and CJ. $85 million.
Oh, by the way, in 2 years, Zach Collins' extension is going to have to be a conversation. Right. Nurkic might want a conversation because this is his first This is his first year of the four-year extension, a four-year deal.
Yes.
First or second?
So. I think, yeah, something like that.
But anyways, the point to what you're saying is in 2 years, those hits are going to come with those contracts, and then you might have other young players.
Right, how you could afford to keep them all.
Right. And that's that was my problem. Yeah. And that's what I'm wondering is when these five players that you're really committed to, is it just we're all in and that's the championship nucleus, or is Neil Oshea going to be flexible in that regard? It's a tough thing to figure out, and I don't want to sound like we're way overreacting because they're having a down year.
Yeah, three starters going down is a big part of the element. Nobody's denying that.
It's just brutal. It's tough to deal with, I think, for a franchise. But to that listener who said the scapegoat thing, I think that listener is right and hitting the nail right on the head. And I also think it's very fair to be having these conversations because if he doesn't start as slow as he did the first month and a half of the season,
which he does every year, it feels like,
how many more games do they win versus they sucked? When you kind of look at it that way, like, did you cost might not be the right word. If you don't give a certain level of production that doesn't help the team get X amount of games, you're four games back. Were there four games at the start of the year where he wasn't playing well that had he played playoff CJ type that they might be locked with the Grizzlies going into the break?
Yeah, you're tied for the 8 seed, or you're ahead of the 8 seed because he's playing like it's game 7.
Right.
Instead of saying at the All-Star break, now when I show up.
On, yeah.
Now I'm going to start making my threes.
All right, well, we got a loaded second hour. Bill Riley, who's a longtime radio host in Salt Lake City, also the longtime voice of the Utah athletic programs. He is in town for the basketball team. He's going to join us in studio at 1:15. We'll talk Pac-12 with him. But we're going to start the second hour with this question. If somebody reclines a seat in your face, do you keep punching it an entire flight?
Oh God!
Or do you just sit there and take it? Let's talk about this huge debated topic involving a passenger on an airplane. We'll kick off hour number 2 there on The Fan.